Thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Welcome back to our series, Glimpses of Greatness. And this week, we're going to be having the opportunity of learning a little bit more about Rav David Feinstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, as we spend some time with Rav Tzvi Ram, which is a very fantastic opportunity for all of us. I'd like to start off by thanking our sponsors, to Nachman and Toby Lokshin, who are sponsoring the entire series, Lili Nishmas, the Yortan of Toby's father, Mr. Abraham Flesher, Avram Eliezer ben Yehuda Leib Olav HaShalom. Also today, we have the opportunity of thanking our sponsors for this particular session upon some very special occasions. We thank Baruch and Esther Weinstein, who are sponsoring today's session for the 32nd Yortzeit of Baruch's mother, Mrs. Gladys Weinstein Gittel Bas Zanvil Dov, whose Yortzeit will be this evening. Ezra Hashem, she should continue to get nachas from the family as it grows, expands, and brings more Kiddush Hashem into the world. We're also going to be thanking Moish and Michelle Boydek and David Kramer who are sponsoring for the Yortzeit of their father, Mr. Simo Kramer, Simcha Zev Ben Chaim, Simcha Zev Dov Chaim Ben Tzvi David, whose Yortzeit is this week as well. A man who always brought a smile to our shul and to wherever he went. And Mr. Shem should have continued Aliyas Neshama. And every time his name is mentioned, should be Livracha as a blessing. We also thank Michael and Karen Rosenblum for sponsoring. This is around the time of Michael's mother's Yortzeit, Mrs. Harriet Rosenblum. Henya Chemda Bas Shmuel Alea Shalom. And also today happens to be the Pidyon HaBen, their first grandson, Yehuda Yishai Judah Franco Ruffel, who's going to be Nifte this evening, B'Sha'at Tav Mutzlachas, on a beautiful mitzvah. Mitzvah Hashem, he should continue to bring Kiddush into the world and fill the lofty shoes of the names that he carries as well. And also we thank Yitzchak and Barbara Siegel, who are sponsoring for Barbara's mother's Yortzeit, Mrs. Sarah Ann Lehman, whose Yortzeit is this week. Sarah Bas Yitzchak Mishulam Faivish Shachana Edel V'chayachana Edel Alea Shalom Be'ezras Hashem, she too should look down and get continued nachas from all the incredible work, community work and beyond, that you are both involved with. Thank you so much, everybody, for joining. And let's get down to business. It is a great opportunity that we have today with us, Rabbi Tzvi Ram. For those who do not know Rabbi Ram yet, Rabbi Ram is the Rav of the Bialystok Shul down on the Lower East Side. He also teaches Gemara. He teaches in the IBC program in Yeshiva University. So when I was working there, I had the opportunity of getting to see Rabbi Ram in practice as well. And he's also the administrator of the Manhattan based in for Geirus, for conversions. And I have the incredible zechus, the merit of working alongside or watching him when he works on that based in on a almost monthly basis, as we get to see some of the most incredible human beings who are joining Klal Yisrael. And so, Rabbi Ram, thank you so much for taking the time to be with us this morning.
Thank you, Rabbi Trump. It's really always a pleasure working with you with the Beis Din for Conversions, which we've been involved with in recent times. And it's really a pleasure to be here with you this morning and to join virtually with the Young Israel of Lawrence Cedarhurst community.
Thank you. It really is incredible. It's been, for those who have not been watching, Rabbi Ram has given a number of shiurim, written an article in the Lehrer House about Rav David Feinstein. And I think that for some of us, I know I can see some of the guests, some of the folks who are watching in today, really had a relationship with him. I can see Mr. Questel is over here, who's with us today, who really had a relationship. But for a lot of us, unfortunately, we didn't necessarily have that relationship. We're looking to really learn a little more to gain an appreciation. Would it be possible just to give us a general sort of sense of the biography, just sort of a general biography of Rav David, just to give us a framework?
Sure. First of all, something I can recommend, which I myself was very moved by just watching about a week ago, the yeshiva, Masivta Tiferet Jerusalem, MTJ, which of course was Rav David's yeshiva and Rav Moshe's yeshiva, Rav Moshe Feinstein's yeshiva before Rav David, put out a beautiful hour-long, I think maybe more than an hour-long tribute to Rav David's life, which is available online And among the many, many beautiful aspects of the presentation, it also goes through a little bit of the early biography. You know, Reb David passed away at the age of 91. He was born in 1929. So most of us don't remember back that far. So it goes through a little bit of his early history, which is really very fascinating. And even those of us who knew him personally may not have known the original history. Reb David Zatzal was born in Luban, which was in communist Russia. His father, Rav Moshe Zatzal, heroically served as one of the rabbonim under the communists and somehow managed to keep Yiddishkeit going as best as possible under those circumstances. The official communist policy was that religion was not prohibited, but you were not allowed to teach religion to children. In other words, you can practice, the old people can practice religion, you know, they can have a synagogue, they can have a rabbi, they can do all of their silly, you know, antiquated practices, but to teach the next generation, that's turning their minds against the truths of communism, and you're not allowed to teach the children. So Reb David, although he was born in a rabbinic home, was not allowed to be taught. There were no chadarim. And even his father was not allowed to teach him. And the communist secret police were certainly of a caliber that Rav Moshe did not want to risk life and limb to teach his child. So the story goes, as again related on this beautiful video, that Rav Moshe would sit and learn out loud, and Reb David would be in the room. Reb David was not, quote unquote, being taught, but he would sit and listen to his father learning out loud, and apparently as a young boy memorized Tanakh by virtue of just sitting in the room while his father, Rav Moshe, was learning out loud and, quote unquote, teaching him in that indirect fashion. Again, they relate on this video that they used to test, you know, the older people in Luban used to test Reb David's knowledge of Psukim and Tanakh, and they would give him, you know, some Russian money, you know, when he would get a pasuk right. Then he actually accumulated a decent amount of money as a small child, you know, in communist Russia by virtue of his knowing Psukim, which again, he wasn't allowed to learn. When Reb David was about 7 or 8, the family moved briefly to Latvia, where he was enrolled in a cheder for a brief period of time. They were not under the communists. He was allowed to learn in a formal sense. They then relocated to America. There was a brief period of time where Rav Moshe was checking out other rabbinic positions before he ultimately took the position on the Lower East Side, Misivta Tiferes Yushalayim. Once he took that position in an MTJ, so Reb David was transferred into the yeshiva, again, as a young boy, I think 8, 9, something like that. And basically, on a certain level, the rest of Reb David's biography is incredibly simple. For the rest of his life, he was affiliated with MTJ, you know, as an elementary school child, as a high school boy, as someone who matriculated in the Beis Medrash. Really, as his Rebbetzin, Rebbetzin Malka said in the video, Tibad al-Chaim, he never left his father's Dalet Amos. He was constantly in the presence of his father. And one of the things we'll talk about today is just part of the greatness of Reb David, not all of the greatness, but part of the greatness of Reb David is that he was really the Talmud Muvhak of his father, the outstanding student of his father, and the repository of his father's halachic decisions, his Piskei Halacha. But basically, he just stayed in the Lower East Side, stayed in MTJ, did not move out of the neighborhood, did not leave the yeshiva. He eventually, even during his father's lifetime, became a Rebbe in the yeshiva. And I know many of the Balabatim, I know some of the older people on the Lower East Side, remember fondly how they were in Reb David's shir. One person who literally, after he heard the news of Reb David's passing, broke into tears, literally broke into tears, a man in his 70s, I would say, you know, said to me, I remember when he was just Reb David, and then we had to adjust to calling him the Rosh Yeshiva after Rav Moshe's passing. And, you know, the love that he felt and that so many felt for Reb David Zatzal was just something that was very beautiful and meaningful to watch. He was involved in the yeshiva through the time that Rav Moshe Zatzal was Rosh Yeshiva. When Rav Moshe passed away in 1986, he took over the helm as the head of the yeshiva. And, you know, much of the of the impact of Reb David goes beyond the yeshiva itself, because even during his father's lifetime, he was known as a very, very big Talmud Chacham and someone who was involved in paskening shailos. Again, not overstepping into what was his father's territory, but was involved in helping his father to a certain extent with some shailos. Again, we'll talk about that in a little bit. But particularly after his father's passing, he really came into his own as someone who was renowned as a posek, someone who was renowned as a bal etza, somebody who people sought out for his advice, for his direction, really served in that capacity up until his death. He was incredibly, incredibly active till very shortly before his passing.
Wow. Thank you. That really puts things in perspective. Was he in the line of Rav Moshe's children? What number was he in the age order?
So he was the third out of the four surviving children. I think Rav Moshe had a son who died very young, but basically the oldest was Rebbetzin Shiskal, Alei HaShalom, was married to Eliyahu Moshe Shiskal, was a Rosh Hashiva in Tar Vadas. Rebbetzin Sifra Tendler was married to Yibodel Chaim and Moshe David Tendler in YU, then Reb David. Then there was a gap, and when they came to America, Reb Reuven Yibodel Chaim, the Rosh Hashiva and Yeshiva Staten Island, was born.
So let's move to more personal. Then, when was the first time you heard of you got the chance to meet Reb David?
So I can't remember the first time I heard of Reb David, because it certainly goes back. I mean, again, as those of us, yourself, myself, with Talmidim of Yeshiva University, I don't think we had personal contact with Reb David as part of the YU experience, but his name was certainly a name that was well known in the Beis Medrash, during the time that we were there. As is well known, the Feinsteins and the Soloveitchiks are actually related to one another, and there was a very warm relationship between the Rav Zatzal and Rav Moshe Zatzal, and that carried over, into the relationship with Rav David, Rav Reuven, and the succeeding Feinsteins. I must say, even though occasionally one hears of differences of opinion between the Yeshiva University world and the quote-unquote Yeshiva Welt, that was not something that I ever heard from any of the Feinsteins, Reb David, Reb Reuven, any of the children. There was tremendous, tremendous respect for the learning that went on in Yeshiva University, and tremendous respect certainly for the person of the Rav Zatzal. So I can't pinpoint the first time that I ever heard about Reb David, but I had heard psukim from Reb David even as a Talmud in Yeshiva. The first time I met Reb David was actually 19 years ago, exactly this coming Motzei Shabbos. Shabbos Vayakel Pekudei HaChodesh in 2002 was my Prava Shabbos at Bialystoker Synagogue. It was my tryout Shabbos. I guess I passed. They offered me the job. I was told that, part of the Prava informally was that Motzei Shabbos, after all of the presentations in the shul were going to be done, so my wife and I would be accompanied by one of Reb David's Gaboyim up to his apartment and meet with him. Again, from my perspective, I saw it as an opportunity. Probably from the community's perspective, they saw it as an extension of the Prabha. Let's see if he passes muster with Reb David. So we came up Motzei Shabbos. The Gaboy brought us to the apartment. Rang the doorbell, and the door opens up, and it's Reb David himself in his shirt sleeves, no tie, no jacket, very informal. Shalom Aleichem, nice to meet you. You come in. We sat down at the table, Reb David, Tibot Lechaim is Rebetzin, Rebetzin Malka, my wife and myself, the Gabbai, and we just really schmoozed for a period of time. Reb David was not the biggest schmoozer. He tended to be a quiet person, but he was friendly. And, he would always make people that he interacted with feel very comfortable. And the truth is, I walked away from that Shabbos thinking, I may or may not get the position. But at the very least, I had an opportunity to sit and schmooze for half an hour with one of the Gedolei Yisrael, with an outstanding rabbinic personality. So that was the first time. And then, once coming to the neighborhood, the interaction was fairly frequent. Those who know the Lower East Side know that even though we're located in Manhattan, we're essentially a shtetl. It's a couple of blocks long, and everybody knows one another. Everybody interacts with one another. I mean, there are about, again, pre-COVID, I would say there were about 15 different minyanim that would take place on a Shabbos morning for a community that has, maybe 250 Shomer Shabbos families. If anyone, again, pre-COVID, would make a kiddush in their shtibl, so most of the neighborhood would come over to wish mazel tov or to say hello or whatever it happens to be, because there was just this feeling that, we're all one big family. We just happen to be spread out among different places. So, in that kind of environment, people would very often ask me, do you have anything to do with Reb David? It was almost a silly question. We all have what to do with one another. So, of course, certainly the Rabbanim had what to do with Reb David, during the course of the many years, asking him shiloh, seeking etzos, community issues certainly would be brought to Reb David for his impromptu. And he was very much a presence in the neighborhood. He did not lock himself in his apartment. He was a person who was out in the streets. He would do shopping in the local supermarkets. Again, as many people have mentioned, he used to eat breakfast in the local pizza shop for years and years and years, basically until the pizza shop closed. That was his regular, part of his schedule on a typical morning. He davened, when he was well enough to walk easily, he would walk the couple of blocks to the pizza shop, have breakfast there, walk back to the yeshiva, and he was incredibly inaccessible in that kind of way.
Incredible, incredible. So humble, so with the people. That's unbelievable.
His humility was something that was commented on, and it again, I don't see into anyone's heart, but one got the sense that the humility was incredibly genuine. It wasn't a put on. He wasn't, sometimes people in their arrogance try to project an image of being humble. You didn't get that impression at all. He was a person who, as I know Rav Aaron Kahn was Maspid Reb David, said, the underlying aspect of his life was that he was just an Eved Hashem. He was a servant of Hashem. What does Hashem want from me in this circumstance? It could be to give a shiur. It could be to paskin an end-of-life shiloh. It could be to fill the soda machine, as he did for so many years in the yeshiva. I remember when the last couple of years they built Reb David a somewhat more rabbinic-looking office in the yeshiva. But for many, many years, certainly I remember when coming to the Lower East Side almost 19 years ago, his office was at the end of the hall. And the office doubled as a storage room for old svarim, soda cans to restock the soda machine. And in the midst of what looked like kind of like a warehouse, Reb David had a little table and a little chair in the corner, and that was his office. And he was perfectly fine with that. He didn't need a mahogany desk or anything like that. He liked things very, very simple.
Unbelievable. Actually reminds me that Rabbi Akiva Eiger says that the masveh that Moshe Rabbeinu, the veil Moshe Rabbeinu wore, was to veil his humility, because in order to be that leader, he needed to actually hide the humility from the extra ink that was came from the little aleph in the Vayikra. So in a certain sense, but he never lost that. Meaning when he came to Hashem, he took off the veil. So
Right.
the core was, there's so many arrogant people who want to pretend to be humble. Moshe Rabbeinu was a really essentially humble person who had to pretend to be a strong leader from time to time, but out of his basic personality was humility. Like you were saying, so this is a beautiful, beautiful description. I think that not so many people realize just the scope of the types of shilas and the scope of the types of decisions that were passed across the desk of Rav David. I mean, so many levels. You mentioned life and death, so many different things. Can you just give us a sense of some of the shilas you're privy to, or you got a sense of, that really were under his jurisdiction, under his guidance?
Sure. So first of all, with Pesach coming up, something that I think many people don't realize is that the almost ubiquitous shiurim for matzah, maror, dalet kosos, almost every Pesach guide, they print those pages that show you, you know, like how many inches of matzah you have in order to make a kezayis. Those shiurim were developed by Reb David. They're presented as quote unquote Rav Moshe's shiurim, but the one who sort of did the research and then presented it to Reb Moshe for his stamp of approval was Reb David. And I've heard from people, again, who were a little bit older and remember in the yeshiva, they remember Reb David going to the science lab in MTJ. You know, they had a full science lab as part of their high school. They would go to the science lab in MTJ and take beakers and, you know, start measuring liquids in order to, you know, get a full sense of what a revius would be, you know, for the purposes of Dalet Kosos or the like. And, he did experimentation with all of the shiurim, the way they're presented in Chazal, to try to translate that into modern day terms. Anytime, you know, a person uses those shiurim, you're feeling the impact of Reb David, whether you're aware of it or not. I'm not privy to the full scale of Shailos Tshuvos, you know, so I spoke to one of his gaboim over Shabbos, who does have a better sense of what the shilas were that were actually coming in. So he said, overwhelmingly, and again, this is my sense anecdotally, overwhelmingly, people would bring end-of-life shilas to Reb David in the last years. Again, I know just from my own experience, you know, he was one of the addresses in the United States for anything having to do with end-of-life decisions. I remember having a relative myself who called me up, you know, a person did not live in the Lower East Side, and said, you know, I have a relative who's in an end-of-life situation. I need a psak. Do you happen to have, like, Reb David's secret phone or something like that to be able to get to him directly? But he passed in many, many of those shilas. I know also from Talmidim, he had many Talmidim over the years who became Rabbonim in different communities, some who became Rabbonim in communities where there were many Kiruv type shilas. I know many of those Rabbanim who would call Reb David throughout the time that they were out, so to speak, of the hinterlands, you know, dealing with the kinds of shilas that, you know, come up in those types of situations. People went to him, personal status issues, you know, is the person Jewish? Is the person not Jewish? Is the person a Kohen? Is the person not a Kohen? Things of that nature. I know even recently the major kashrus organizations would consult with Reb David on kashrus issues. I know recently with, cloning cells of animals, you know, let's say if you clone pig cells, you make a pig out of cloned material, you know, what's that status in terms of kashrus? That was a question that was asked to Reb David. He, you know, over the years, and again, his career in psak spanned decades, probably anything under the book, you know, was really brought to him in that kind of regard. I mentioned it in the Lehas article that you mentioned, and again, others have certainly mentioned it as well. Rav Yoshev Zatzal consistently would tell people in America that Reb David was the address, you know, for psak halacha. So, you know, when you're at that point in the pyramid, you know, ultimately every kind of shiloh goes to you. Having said that, I think it's also important to emphasize that he was not shy to answer what we might call yalla v'yavo type shilohs. Meaning, one of the things that was really incredible about Reb David was that he had this national and international prominence, but he never stopped viewing himself as a child of the Lower East Side, as sort of a neighborhood personality, a neighborhood Talmud Chacham, that manifested itself in many ways, but it also manifested itself in, you know, the stam person on the street feeling comfortable to go over to Reb David and ask him a shiloh, which the person may have thought was, you know, an earth-shattering question. But in point of fact, really, they could have looked it up in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch. And Reb David, you know, did his fair share of responding to those types of shilas as well. And, you know, there was never a point at which he would say anything along the lines of, you know, like, why don't you look this up on the Ezra's Torah, Luach? You know, why are you bothering me with this kind of shilah? Kakot and Kagodo Tishmon, you know, he was a person who was ready to paskin the biggest shilas, but was also ready to paskin the small shilas as well. That was an integral part of his personality.
Incredible. It comes back to sort of that humility as well, that just whatever it is, without there being a judgment on the person.
He had this incredible connection to people of the Lower East Side, and I think it's relevant to mention, you know, even in the context of a presentation for people in the Five Towns who are not from the Lower East Side, you know, it's reminiscent of the statement, all politics is local, that ultimately, you know, as big, you know, as the politics may be, at some point, everything goes back to the local, you know, neighborhood, you know, to what's going on in a local setting. So I think for Reb David as well, Reb David, you know, never lost sight of the fact that with all of the influence that he had, and people would come from all over to ask him shilas, Sundays especially, people would line up in the yeshiva, you know, from many other places to ask shilas, to ask for brachos, to ask for eitzos, you know, they would want to interact with him. But he never lost sight of the fact that he was rooted in a particular neighborhood. And I think that's an important lesson for all of us. You know, you have to be connected to the concentric circles that are around you, that are closest to you. Never lose sight of your family. Never lose sight of your neighbors. Never lose sight of the people who are close to you in a geographic sense, you know, and that's important no matter how great you are and how great an influence you have. You know, that local aspect of things is very, very important. When he would travel during the summer, just like a little thing, which a parent, you know, told me, he would travel during the summer sometimes, you know, he did not take many vacations. I mean, even during the summer, he was mostly at home in the Lower East Side. But when he would travel occasionally, he'd take a little bit of time here and there, he'd go upstate sometimes during the summer. If he had the chance, he would go around the camps where various Lower East Side kids were there for the summer, and he would just visit his boys. You know, he'd stop in at the camps and, oh, there's a Lower East Sider here, you know, let's go say hello. Now, again, if you've ever been in a camp and they bring a rabbinic personality to the camp, you know, it's always like a big to-do, you know, a tzaddik baloir, you know, that sort of thing. You know, the you know, this Rosh Hashiva is coming, that Rosh Hashiva is coming, this big Rav is coming. He would just stop in the camp, you know, oh, is, you know, Chaim Yankel Goldberg, you know, over here, just want to say hello, you know, he's, I know he's in the camp for the summer. So that kind of, you know, simplicity was part of the way that he would function as well.
Unbelievable. You know, I think that another aspect that people are not aware of is, you know, like eventually you open up a regular stone edition of the Chumashim and you go to the back of every parsha.
Yeah.
David was the one who wrote the Devei Torah about the mnemonics, about the number of psukim in each parsha. I was just wondering, from your perspective, was there a Devei Torah, a idea, a thought that particularly resonated with you, or that something was shogar b'fiv that he used to say a lot of the time?
I'll share a psak, which... I heard this at the Shiva, actually, from his sons. And I think it's the psak itself. It's an interesting psak. It's also a very illustrative psak, I think, in some ways. So Rav Moshe, we'll go back to Rav Moshe. Again, Rav David was such a repository of the psakim of Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe has a tshuva where he talks about he was asked about a certain shita of Rav Yaakov Emden. Yaakov Emden, of course, was one of the great Torah authorities in the 1700s. Rav Yaakov Emden had the following psak. Yaakov Emden said that when you're learning a Blat Gemara and you come across the Shem Hashem, you can say the Shem Hashem as we would say it in davening. You don't have to say Hashem. You could say Adokai. You know, you could pronounce the Shemos as we would normally pronounce them in davening. And that's true even for the brachos and the tfilos, which are mentioned in Shas. So in other words, if you encounter a line in the Gemara where it says Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Shehakol Nehiyah Bidvaro, you can recite the bracha with the regular Shemos as if you were about to drink a cup of water. And Rav Moshe, the tshuva, basically says, yeah, we don't really follow that. You know, we don't want to take, you know, the name of God in what's potentially in vain in that kind of context. And that's what he writes in the tshuva. Apparently, not in the tshuva, you know, apparently orally, Rav Moshe held that if there was a need, one could rely on that psak of Rav Yaakov Emden. So you say, what kind of need? You know, the guy's learning Gemara and he just, you know, he feels this uncontrollable urge. He has to say the Shem Hashem. Like, what kind of need exactly would come up? So Rav Moshe said, look, sometimes there are times where a person is not sure whether a bracha should be recited or not. You know, generally speaking, there's a principle, Safek brachos lahakel. If you're not sure, don't say the bracha. But under certain circumstances, it might be permissible to recite the bracha with the shame, but to do so in a context where you're learning. So in other words, if, you know, if the Gemara were to introduce a certain bracha, you know, by saying, you know, when you drink, say, Baruch atah Hashem, lakenu melech haolam, sheakol nehiyeh bedvaro. So you could learn the Gemara and then say the bracha as part of that, and then that would enable you to say the bracha in a kind of backhanded, you know, unusual kind of way. So that's the preface to this story. So apparently Reb David very much held of using this Reb Yaakov Emden b'shas adchak, and here was an example of b'shas adchak. Again, I heard this at the shiva from the sons. So a fellow was making a pidyon haben. I know you mentioned that one of the sponsors today, there's a pidyon haben in the family. Wish everybody a mazel tov, shem lad nachas. So a fellow was making a pidyon haben. And as it happens occasionally, the fellow miscalculated and they planned the pidyon haben for a day before the actual day when the pidyon haben would have been relevant. You know, they planned the pidyon haben for a day early. And as, you know, one could well imagine this kind of situation, they only sort of realized that the Pidyon HaBen was a day early, as it got very, very close to the actual day, and it would have been very difficult and embarrassing to cancel, right? You know, it's 2 days before, a day before, and all of a sudden, you know, they look at the calendar, and it's, we kind of messed this up over here. So they went to Reb David. Reb David said, not a problem. So go ahead with the Pidyon HaBen. All the brachas you say at the Pidyon HaBen, recite them in the context of the Gemaras that quote those brachas. And so for the average person attending the Pidyon HaBen, it will look like it's a regular Pidyon HaBen. All of the brachas are going to be recited. You know, they'll just be introduced with a couple of extra words. Tanu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught. Okay, you know, maybe they'll figure, okay, maybe that's like a Galatz Yana Minog or something like that. And they'll go ahead with the Pidyon HaBen and everything's going to be wonderful. Everything's going to be great. And then quietly the next day, call back in the Kohen, bring in the baby, do the actual Pidyon HaBen. But, you know, at least this way you can save face in that kind of fashion. And I think it's first of all, it's a very interesting psak, you know, that you could go ahead and just say all of these brachos, which under normal circumstances would be a bracha levatala, a vain bracha, you know, because everything's being done a day before the right time. But also, what profound sensitivity. You know, a person, a Rav could have just told the person, you know, okay, you kind of really messed this up. Swallow your pride. Send out the email, you know, the un-evite, and just tell everybody it's going to be the following day and deal with it, you know. Reb David was incredibly, incredibly sensitive to people's feelings. And even if it meant relying on a psak, which his father had written in the Igros Moshe, was not such an accepted psak. But, you know, if we need to rely on that in order to preserve a person's dignity, to preserve a person's feelings, you know, so that's something very, very important, and we should definitely do so. I think there's just such, you know, such sensitivity in that psak. And again, I'm sure there are many other psakim of that nature. You know, you pull out all the stops when it comes to trying to protect somebody's dignity, somebody's honor, and to save somebody from embarrassment. A very, very beautiful idea.
Sure. So that's all that convergence of that sensitivity and psak at the same time.
Right.
Just incredible. When you mentioned so his relationship to his father, you know, Rav Moshe was prolific. He wrote and he responded, and the Igros Moshe, there's still material which hasn't been even published of Rav Moshe. Yet Rav David didn't seem to take the same halach of those written psakim and publishing. And how did he view himself in relationship to his father? It's sort of the Yitzhak after the Avraham, perhaps the how did
right. Right. So the article I wrote in the Lear House, I actually gave my perspective on that, which again, do with it what you may. You know, is it it's not Rav David's perspective; it's my own perspective. But I think Reb David, as part of his humility, also had this incredible democratic ethos. You know, he really believed that Torah should be made as accessible as possible to as many people as possible. And I think one of the things that, again, people do not appreciate as much as they should is the incredible role that Reb David Zatzal played in the Art Scroll movement. You know, again, if you look through the Art Scroll, the Svarim, you know, his name is listed as a trustee of the Masora Heritage Foundation. Okay, you know, I don't really read that page. Yes, at the end of every parsha, his very insightful, notes on the mnemonics that are used to summarize the number of psukim in the parsha are mentioned. Okay, fine. But the truth is, Reb David was really a major role in the whole project of Art Scroll. Rabbi Meir Zlatowitz, Zichrono Livracha, was a Talmud in MTJ. And that's, really, it was somebody who looked to Rav Moshe and to Reb David for guidance. There's a beautiful story that, again, I mentioned that Lehrhaus article was written up by Rabbi Yisrael Besser in Mishpacha magazine. I think he wrote it also in the biography of Rabbi Meir Zlatowitz, that in the early days of Art Scroll was very, very behind on money. And they were having a hard time. They thought the whole enterprise was going to collapse. So when Reb David got wind of it, he basically took his life savings and he loaned it to Rabbi Zlatowitz. And he said, look here, so I have this money, you'll give it back to me eventually. But for right now, do it, use it to serve the klal, to serve Art Scroll. And he valued the work of Art Scroll tremendously. I mean, again, it's not just that he wrote a Haskama. He handed over his life savings and said, use this to help further Art Scroll. So anytime you pick up an Art Scroll sefer of any sort, Reb David was behind it, not just spiritually, but in a material sense, was really a major supporter of Art Scroll as well. He believed that Torah should be accessible to people. And I think that manifests itself in, his shiur style. The shiurim tended to be very simple and straightforward. He read the Gemara, he read Rashi, he read Tosfos. He gave a Mishnah Berurah shiur on Sunday mornings. The shiurim were very pshat and text oriented. Now again, so you give an interesting interpretation of something, but again, very, very pshat. They were not what you might call a razzle-dazzle kind of shiur, where you walk away, wow, that was brilliant. Let's focus on learning the text and just trying to understand it. And whatever he did write tended to be very popular in nature also. His svarim are English svarim. The svarim that they put out through Art Scroll, are English language. I know one of the Balabatim that you cited was close to Reb David, once told me that if you took one of Reb David's Svarim with Gematrias, he liked Gematrias very much. If you were to write it up in Hebrew and print it and leave the author's name out, he said people would think it's one of the Rishonim, who's writing these Gematrias. But he put it out in English. Why? Because I think he felt he wanted to make Torah as accessible as possible. He wanted to make himself as accessible as possible. He wanted to make Torah as accessible as possible. And that was, I think, a sort of democratic ethos, that motivated him to a very large extent. Having said that, when we talk about the differences between himself and Rav Moshe, it's also important to talk about the similarities between himself and Rav Moshe. The humility, Rav Moshe was renowned for Ish Moshe Anav Me'od Mikol Adam Asher Al Pnei Hu Adama. It was said about Moshe Rabbeinu, but it could have been said about Rav Moshe Feinstein as well. This tremendous humility and respect for everybody. And readiness to interact with everybody, no heirs or the like. And again, the psukim of his father were things that he knew firsthand. I know I mentioned this in one of the hesbedim that I gave in our work with the Beis Din. So our posuk is Rav Heschel Shechter Shlita, certainly has a connection to the Five Towns community. There were two occasions where Rav Shechter said, please go and ask this Shaila and Geirus to Reb David. And his feeling was that Reb David would be able to accurately convey Rav Moshe's position, because he had been so close to Rav Moshe that, asking Reb David was the equivalent of basically getting the Masorah straight, from Rav Moshe Feinstein with regard, to any issue that one was to ask. Even so, there were certain things that Rav Moshe did that Reb David, that were perhaps idiosyncratic, that Reb David would follow what everybody else did. They say for many years by the Starim, also talking about Pesach, Rav Moshe had certain hanhagas, had certain practices that were based on the Vilna Gaon. So like the Vilna Gaon, Rav Moshe would use two matzahs by the Seder. I guess it's cheaper that way, right? Now, the Vilna Gaon held that you didn't need Lechem Mishnah on the night of the Seder, right? So you break one of the matzahs. Yes, you don't have Lechem Mishnah, but the din of Lechem Mishnah is waived on the night of the Seder. The males at the Feinstein Seder would each have their own set of matzahs. Reb David would use three. I with Moshe. Okay, but you know, the minhag ha'olam, the standard practice is to use three. So again, there were a few things like that where Reb Moshe would have a certain position which was idiosyncratic, and Reb David would be aware of his father's position, certainly, but would defend his father's position, but in practice might follow the Mishnah Brura or some more generally accepted approach in that regard. I'm teaching now in the shul every Friday night. There's a Dvar Halacha between Kabbalah Shabbos and Ma'ariv. We're learning from a beautiful Sefer, V'Dibar Tobam, which was put out by Rav David, Rav Baruch Moskowitz, Shlita, who's a close chavrusa for Rav David for many, many years, and put out Svarim detailing some of the psakim of Rav David. And it's interesting to note how, there are times where Reb David will veer from his father's psak, will acknowledge his father's psak, will certainly say if a person wants to rely on his father's psak, he certainly can. But if the Mishnah Brura holds a little bit differently, he'll recommend that the average person follow the Mishnah Brura, but again, he was a tremendous, tremendous repository of his father's psakim.
So just to take that further for a second, I remember once hearing that Rav Soloveitchik used to comment, and as you mentioned before, Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Moshe had a very close relationship and familial relationship, that the Rav used to comment that he was called the Rav and Rav Moshe was called the Rosh Hashiva, when it should have been the other way around, when he was really, Rav Soloveitchik was more Rosh Hashiva and Rav Moshe was more of a Poisek. But I heard that Rav Moshe himself, what he favored was his Dibros Moshe more than the Igros Moshe, even his writings on the Gemara, his shirim that he gave in the yeshiva as the Rosh Hashiva, more than even the psakim. Where did Rav David stand in that spectrum? Did he view himself more as the Rosh Hashiva, as the Poisek in between? Where was his call?
That's interesting. I think what was said about Rav Moshe really does apply very much to Reb David, meaning the title that everybody used in referring to Reb David, certainly in the neighborhood, but beyond the neighborhood, was the Rosh Hashiva. In the Lower East Side, you spoke about the Rosh Hashiva, that's who you meant. You were talking about Reb David. Having said that, in many ways, his personality was, or his focus, I guess, his professional focus in some ways was more that of a Rav, meaning he was paskening shilas locally, he was paskening shilas globally. And, there was also an element of, local leadership that he took. I mean, certainly all the local rabbanim, would look to him. There was never a formal hierarchy or anything like that, but informally, it was understood that there was a hierarchy. And if there was any kind of community issue, it ultimately would be brought to him, for his input and his weighing in. I remember in my early days, there was one. Unfortunately, there were many such times that they were firing rockets from the Gaza Strip into Eretz Yisrael. There's so many times, unfortunately, I don't remember which particular one it was, but it was, communities around the world were saying Tehillim, and Reb David felt that it would be important for the whole community to gather together and say Tehillim together, have words of chizuk. So physically, I have the largest shul in the neighborhood. So he said we should make it in Bialystok shul. All the rabbanim should come together, get their balabatim to come and say Tehillim. And Reb David got up and he addressed the assembled, which was unusual. He was not a speaker. He would give shiurim, but spoke in public very, very rarely. And his focus was, what kind of kavanah can we have in our tefillos to address the situation? what kinds of things could we take upon ourselves, you know, spiritually to address the situation. You know, he played that role of communal leader, you know, when he felt that it was necessary and when he felt that, you know, his words would have a maximal impact. And again, you know, I think he really did see himself in that Rav, who, you know, if we can talk about the Rav having a Rav, meaning having an impact on the people, as opposed to being in a kind of ivory tower, Rosh Yeshiva, you know, set up. So he very much viewed himself as a person of the people and a person who related to the people in that kind of way.
Mm-hmm. This has been really incredible, Rabbi Ram. What would you say, you know, for us, as folks, you know, as regular folks, what is that we could take away? What's some what lesson that we could take into our own lives from Rav David to be just somewhat closer to the type of world that he envisions?
Right. So one of the things that comes to mind is what those of us who say V'yiten lecha motzi Shabbos say about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You know, b'chol makom sh'ato motze gdulaso, shamato motze on v'sanuso. Whenever you find his greatness, talking about Hashem, you find his humility as well. Greatness and humility are not contradictory. They actually, the humility enhances the greatness. I think that's a very important lesson for Rav David. I'm struck in this period of time how Rav David was really able to relate to people across the Orthodox spectrum. You know, unfortunately, I know you and I were talking about this in a different context. This past year, besides all of the difficult things associated with the COVID-19 pandemic, one of the many, many distressing and terrible things is just how much of our rabbinic leadership has passed away in this past year. Again, some from COVID, some not from COVID, but, you know, just the sheer, the names, it's almost like a whole generation, you know, in the course of a year was really taken away from us. So what's interesting is that, you know, among those great leaders who were taken away from us, some of them operated within, you know, what we'll call the modern Orthodox world, you know, Yeshiva University, you know, the Dati Lumi community in Eretz Yisrael. Some of them operated in the more Haredi world. And I've seen different groups talk about the loss of great rabbinic leadership. The Haredi groups tend to talk about the loss of great Haredi leadership. The modern Orthodox Dati Lumi groups tend to talk about the loss of great modern Orthodox Dati Lumi leadership. But one thing that both lists have in common is both lists tend to list Reb David Feinstein on the you know, the roster of great rabbinic leaders who were lost. You know, they may not list other Haredi leaders, or the Haredi leaders may not list other, you know, modern Orthodox leaders. But somehow Reb David, like his father in so many ways, was a person, you know, who people in the OU and the Yeshiva University world would feel comfortable approaching, sat on the Moetzes. There were many people learning in the yeshiva who were from the Hasidic world, and Satmer Hasidim, if you know, had their issues with Rav Moshe Feinstein on certain issues, but with Reb David, they would come to Reb David for brachas, you know? And, you know, the rare example of someone who was so respected in the Hasidic world, in the Yeshivish world, in the modern Orthodox world, someone who was sought after and seen as a bridge in that kind of way, is just a tremendous, tremendous loss for Klal Yisrael. It's not someone who's easy to replace, you know, on that level of halachic leadership, who's, you know, so acknowledged across the spectrum. I guess if we were to try to emulate that in our own lives, it's to realize that, you know, there's more that unites us as a people than that which divides us. I think I mentioned this in the hesped I gave through YU. I remember there was a few years ago in the neighborhood, they wanted to make a fundraiser for Karnei Shomron, one of the yeshuvim in the Shomron. So Reb David came to the fundraiser, and at the end of the fundraiser, he wrote out a check, you know, and it wasn't an anonymous check. It said, you know, David Feinstein at the top. He gave him the check. Somebody counted to me, you know, what other Rosh Yeshiva who was not part of the Mizrahi world, you know, but, you know, would have no problem. Okay, we're supporting Yeshuv and Yehuda v'Shomron. Great, you know, here's a check. You know, without any fanfare, it wasn't, you know. But that the labels didn't matter so much to him. You know, he was a person who just saw Jews, and something very, very powerful and very profound about that that I think we can certainly all look to emulate.
Very much so. Very much, Ram. Thank you so much. This has been very elevating, and I hope for all of us educational. And it's a shame the opportunity to learn more of Rav David's Torah, and to also ultimately become just a little bit more like him, like the world that he really envisioned. I want to take you an opportunity to thank you for making the time early on the Sunday morning. Thank everybody else for joining us. It should be a shavua tov, Be'ezras Hashem, a wonderful week ahead.
I mean, thank you so much for having me, and thank you for all the participants for joining.